Welcome to the Radio 191 FM podcast.
This is just a little content warning. We criticised the use of sexual assault in the plot of an adjacent book. So if you're not up to that, you can just give this one a miss.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Required Reading.
I'm Charlie.
And I'm Amy.
And we are two unqualified Otago students.
And in this podcast, we discuss books and sometimes their adaptations, mostly so we can avoid our uni work.
In our final episode of Required Reading, we are doing part two of His Dark Materials. We're talking The Tall and Out of Place Albatross, Eva Green, complex critiques of organized religion, and of course, the fact that adult books cannot be cheerful. Stay tuned to find out more. So,
yeah,
it's our last episode.
I know.
Well, at least in this current form.
Yeah.
At Radio One.
Oh my God. They've done us so well.
They've seriously treated us brilliantly. We don't know where Required Reading is going to go next.
We're hoping it's somewhere.
Yeah.
We love it. We love doing it. It's our, some would say, passion project.
Yeah. But, you know, that's up to the podcast gods. And also us.
Yeah.
And what we do with it. So it's kind of up to both.
And whether we propose to people. Hey.
Yeah. Please.
Do you want to just help us a little bit?
So but
until then this is
goodbye.
Yeah.
But we're really going out with a bang.
We are.
Because we're doing another part two.
Thank God.
We love to do a part one, part two for a series.
And look, like last time with the Cherub part one, part two, wasn't planned.
No.
With the best of intentions.
Yeah.
To wrap this all up into one. But it seems that these kind of series have such a big impact on us. We don't even know it until we start actually talking about it. And then, wow, you know, things get out of hand.
They seriously do. And there's so many things to talk about, especially with the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
You know, Cherub had, 12, 13 books?
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense to have a two-parter. This is only three.
We've talked about more books in it. There's so much in it.
Yeah.
It's so dense and amazing. We're not even talking about it. We're talking about just a little bit of it.
I know.
You know?
I know. It's totally fabulous. So, yeah, I'm excited to get back into it, get back into our discussion, talk about the Northern Lights series as a whole, what we thought, also go into the online communities and, you know, really dive in,
I'm so excited.
But before we dive in.
Because I'm feeling I had an exam this morning. I'm feeling very tight.
I'm feeling very academic. It's cold outside.
It is, and wet.
My joints need to be
loosened.
Lubricated.
So
I guess my question to you is how have you furthered the gay agenda today?
I'll see. I thought you would ask me this. You know, I had a wee inkling. It's not like we discussed it beforehand or anything. The way that I furthered the gay agenda today is I worked on a list that I have on my phone, which is titled Women I Just Really Wanted to Be Friends With, and I thought that they were just so cool that now I realise I liked in a gay way.
Oh.
The most recent one being Emma Thompson in the movie Much Ado About Nothing.
Right.
What a charismatic woman.
Lesbian awakening.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that is fabulous.
That's furthering the gay agenda.
Yeah. What I did today is... How did I feather the gay agenda today? What have I done today? I made pancakes. I then drove around for a bit.
Yeah.
And then came home.
Where did you go? That was pretty gay of you. Like, sometimes you just leave the house and you don't tell me where you're going, and I'm like, oh, he's gone to uni, and then you come back 20 minutes later, but you give me no information about where you've been.
I'm very coy about how I spend my days.
And I think some people think that because, you know, we're soulmates, I wouldn't be subject to that coyness, to that reserve, but I am.
Oh, yeah. Nobody is safe from my coyness.
No.
And it's good because we're complete opposites in that way.
Oh, I'm a chronic oversharer.
You overshare every single aspect of your life.
I try and keep things from you just to change it up, and I can't.
And I can.
I had a dream last night that I didn't tell you about, though, but I really wanted to tell you in the car.
And you will tell me in the car ride home, probably.
Probably, yeah. Before we move on from the gay agenda, I just want to put it out there, okay?
Yeah.
It's not just for the queer people to be furthering the gay agenda, okay?
No.
You know? Furthering, this is, the game started as a way to make our flatmate Alex uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's really grown from there into a, you know, realization that everybody can further the gay agenda, you know? And everybody should.
And the trick with furthering the gay agenda is that it can't be too gay.
No.
Otherwise, it's just overt. And so,
can you give me an example?
Well, furthering the gay agenda can't be like walking in a gay rights rally. That's too obvious.
Yeah, no, you're so right.
Too obvious.
Well, it's not on the agenda, you know?
Exactly.
That's just something we're doing.
The agenda is a bit more subtle than that. It's subversive.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And so it has to be something else, something that other people wouldn't pick up on.
My brother has been submitting gay agenda items to me that he's asking whether he's furthering the gay agenda.
Yeah.
One of the obvious ones, like you've just said, would be that he had a conversation with somebody about how he has his pronouns on his hospital badge.
Too obvious.
And I said, that's great.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
Good job.
Yeah.
But obviously you feel that it's too over. One was that he listened to Taylor Swift Midnights 4 times while he cooked dinner.
Perfect.
That is perfect.
Perfect.
He also spends,
that is furthering
sometimes
the gay agenda.
On a special occasion, he'll spend more than 2 hours picking his outfit. And again, that a straight man doing that, fantastic.
Furthering the
gay agenda.
Thank you.
An ally.
Thank you. So, you know, these are all really important discussions around queer identity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
The way you looked at me was like you wanted me to do something. And I was like, I don't feel like I've been hiding anything.
Okay. Let's get into it, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, I think that the first thing that we need to bring up is the world.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Overall.
Yeah.
Or should I say worlds?
Oh yeah, baby.
Because there's lots of them.
The world building in this series is just like
next level.
It's next level. And it's like the world building in this book is like the exemplar.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that every world that needs to be built has to be in the vision of Philip Pullman. I mean, the way that he makes the world feel so far away from our world and yet just near enough is superb.
I think, like, the world itself,
yeah,
fascinating, interesting, immediately engaging.
Yeah.
But what I find so, because I'll say it here.
Okay.
Fantasy, hate it, mostly.
I know you do.
Most
yeah.
of the time. Don't get it. Find it stupid. But the way that he sort of unraveled the rules and the unspoken,
yeah, it's done very well.
Sort of precedents, yep, and all that sort of stuff within the world, and the little tidbits here and there that you learn is so beautiful and organic, and a nice way to sort of introduce people to the world in a nice way that didn't seem kind of overwhelming.
Absolutely. And that's my preferred world building. And I also think it's not like Harry Potter where it's like Harry doesn't know anything. Hagrid tells her. Like,
exactly.
You know, he just gets pure composition.
It's already established.
And
yeah,
I also think, and I've been saying this a bit about House of the Dragon as well.
Yeah.
Is Philip Pullman primarily, from the go, he's actually focusing on the characters more than the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's giving these things away little by little. You're learning more about the world. But the world immediately feels real because the characters are real.
Exactly.
And I think that is the key. Like, I don't think people are like, oh, I've got to like plan out the whole world and think of the magic system and all of the blah, 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 blah. But actually you need like characters that make sense within the world that feel really authentic. That makes the world real.
Because it's also more fun and more realistic to leave unspoken parts of the world.
Absolutely.
And to leave us to kind of fill in, like, really, in Lyra's world, it's not like we get like a specific name for it, but Lyra's world, we really only see in this series of books Svalbard, England, and we get a tiny little bit of Nepal, but Chisigar is like a different world.
No, you're right, yeah.
You know, and so it's like, okay, what would it be like in China?
Yeah.
How does this world, what are the rules and regulations
like
happening over there, you know?
Like, because he hasn't chosen to like establish everything.
Yeah.
there's room for him to continue to explore, and we'll talk about the kind of epilogue, prologue series in a little bit. But like, you get to explore a bit more of the world, which he's not constrained by anything he said in the past.
Exactly.
By any of these things. And I think, not to bring up fantasy again, I'm sorry, I will. That's why Rings of Power is such a flop.
Yeah.
Because like, Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, that is, in case people didn't know.
Yeah.
Instagram ads, though, surely everybody has seen it. Anyway, the problem with that is that the world is fantastic, magical, sensational, but they didn't spend any time on the characters or the plot or the dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just the story in general.
Yeah, it's important, it seems, for storytelling.
Yeah, no, it is. And like, it's not just Lyra's world that he develops so well. Because it starts out quite quaint. It's like, this is the real world, but there's a few subtle tweaks.
You also don't realise that it's a different... You're like, oh, this is our world with demons. But it's not.
No, because there's blimps as well.
Yeah. And as we know, there's not enough fucking blimps.
There's not enough fucking blimps. So when I was a kid, I would have been like, still the real world? Okay.
I was like, am I going to get a car or am I going to get a blimp? Like, a blimp.
For my 16th birthday.
Exactly.
I also thought Sweet 16s.
Oh, I thought it'd be a huge deal.
I thought they were going to be, well, not just like a huge deal, but I just assumed that my mum would like spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on my Sweet 16. 16.
Yeah, I got to but like 15 and I was like, oh, I was almost 16, like, what are we doing? And she was like,
you organize it if you want something. I was like,
she's like,
are you serious?
I never wanted to have a party though.
It was from that really MTV stressful. Show. What was it called?
My Sweet 16. Yeah. But then also like 16, nothing really happened. I went out for lunch with my friends.
Slay.
And then when I was like 21, it's going to be huge. And it was good.
It was huge for you.
Yeah, your 22nd, 21st was pretty huge for you as well.
Yeah, my 16th was huge for me. I vomited in my garden and Mum saw me.
Part of the Amy and then
I
Charlie.
Said, I have food poisoning, Mum. And she went, really? And I went, yeah, it must have been the dinner you made. It wasn't.
It's funny because like a key part of the dynamic, which has changed now because we're both wild.
Yeah.
No, we're not anymore.
Yeah.
We're old.
Become one. We've really found a middle ground.
But in high school, I used to like text Charlie and be like, what are you doing this weekend? Because I'd be in Timaru and you'd be in Wellington.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, what are you up to? And he's like, just had sex with some person at a party and had pills off the ground. Yeah. And then you'd be like, what are you up to?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, I've just been reading.
I finished my second book of the weekend.
Another book. And I'd be like, and I remember so clearly like being in the car and Mum was driving and I like sent you a message being like, tell me my life will get interesting at some stage. And you were like, yeah, and if it doesn't, I'll make it interesting.
And
you did.
Yeah, and it worked. So and it was great. Wasn't a prophecy. It was a statement.
But yeah, I had a quaint teenager.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, back to...
Yes, sorry.
Back to the Northern Lights and the world building.
I swear that was for a reason.
Yeah, we were talking about blimps for 16th birthday
there
parties.
There we go. Yeah.
But,
okay, great.
You know, this first world... Interesting, slight differences, great.
Well, slight and then we differences go, exponentially increasing.
But then we go to Chichagaze. Which is like a completely different world.
Yeah.
And then we go to this idea of like, there's just like worlds upon worlds upon worlds.
It's kind of like a room between worlds.
Yeah.
Is where we end up.
It's fascinating.
It's amazing.
And he explains it all so well that, like, probably if you listen to this first podcast where we talked all through the plot, you'd probably go, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense. It's so dense. It's wild. Like, how can that be condensed down into, like, a 900-word book? Like, in terms of all three books together, it would be, 900. Yeah. Anyway. But he does it so well.
Yeah.
He's very concise. It's never forced and it's never overwhelming.
He also doesn't make mistakes with the world building.
No.
Like I find a lot of, we've talked about how my English degree has ruined reading for me.
Yeah.
Because I see mistakes now.
Yeah.
And the ones that annoy me the most are when people make mistakes in world building.
Yeah.
Like the Game of Thrones audiobook that I listen to has these accents, which we talked about in the translated fiction.
Mm.
But there was this character that came in and he had a South African accent.
What?
And I was like, so you're telling me in the world of Ice and Fire, there's an Africa substitute where the Dutch have colonized it and made Afrikaans the accent? Why, like, that was, it took me out of the story. Because so many things have to happen analogously.
That makes no fucking sense.
For that to make sense.
And as we've also talked about, there's no accents are allowed in fantasy except for English and European if we're going foreign.
My point is that you can't have those accents because you have to explain it within the world.
Mm.
Because those kind of accents like Afrikaans and like American, there has to be like colonization. There has to be like an event that it happens by. It's the same as how like you can't have things. This is exempt from that because this is about religion.
Mm.
But if you're in world building and you have things that like are in any way connected to Jesus, then a Jesus-like figure has to exist in your world. There's all of these things you've got to think about for your world to make sense. And sometimes people slip up and he never fucking does.
No, he never does. He's so, so good.
Yeah.
Ugh. What an interesting world.
How do you do it, though? Like, I've tried.
Know.
I've gone, okay, come on. Come on, Amy.
We all think that we can.
Yeah, of course we do.
But, like, to actually think of a fully realised world, ugh, couldn't. Couldn't be me. I wouldn't.
I don't think it would be you.
No. No, God, no. While we're sort of on this topic of kind of the differences between our world and their world,
mm-hmm.
I also want to talk about the similarities.
Okay, great.
And one of the major similarities is the absolute destructive nature of organized religion.
You're so right. I wasn't sure how you were going to end that sentence.
And I wanted to talk about it. Because I also think that he's got an interesting perspective. Because at the beginning, in the first book, it's very much a critique of organized religion, of corporatizing it, providing power, having hierarchy. Having a set of rules
and
that
also
you break,
having like this distance, like an extreme distance between the church and people, and like because like that is something that was that's big in history is that like before the Bible was not Latin, the only way you could reach God was through the church. You couldn't actually read the text because you couldn't read Latin and you probably couldn't read,
yeah.
And so, like, this is just a continuation. But it's such an extreme of
exactly.
that.
And so I think that was quite, that was like a fascinating critique in and of itself. But then, kind of by the end, the critique becomes the problem of having this idea of a God at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's because, as we talked about in the last episode, it's all of these different people from all of these different worlds that have their own idea of the authority. And in our world, we call it God. And in Lyra's world, they also call it God. But then in other worlds, they call it other things. And they're trying to defeat it because it kind of creates the conditions for power to exist in these worlds.
Yeah.
Again, fascinating.
And I also think the ultimate twist, and I was talking, this was Seamus's favourite part, as like a 12-year-old consuming this.
Yeah.
He was born an atheist. It was actually really annoying.
Yeah.
And
why is that annoying?
It was annoying because there was periods of time where I was like, yeah, Jesus. Ah. And Seamus was like, not real. And I was like, let me explore things, my dude. I'm six. It's the same as having this conversation. My mum was like, I'm not lying to my children. Okay, Santa's not real. And I was like, he is. Like, we had this fight for like, I was like four. I was like, he is real. You can't fool me, you silly woman. And she was like, he's not real. But so that's why it's kind of annoying.
Because
he's like so cut and dry.
Makes sense.
And he is quite like a cut and dry person.
Yeah.
But his favourite part was that there's all of this like build up to like this rush to the authority to defeat this like all powerful being. And he's decrepit.
Yeah.
Like he's sitting in this like little kind of Pope mobile. They open the door and he literally just dissolves.
I know.
And like how awesome is that? That like not only do you have this like critique of God and this like idea of the authority as like ruling everyone everywhere about everything, but he's not even real.
But that's also like the whole thing, the whole point of that twist is to show that it's completely irrelevant if God is real or not.
Yes.
Because really the problem are all of the people that do things in his
the
name.
The agents of God.
You know?
Like Metatron.
We get Metatron.
Fuck that bitch. Seriously. Yeah. What a dick.
Metatron Prime. Yeah. The best Transformer. The best Transformer.
It's biblically accurate.
Not biblically.
Not biblically?
It's Jewish.
Well, that's close enough.
It is close enough.
That it's not, nobody made that up, you know?
No, but I think that he specifically chose Metatron of all the angels that he could have. Because, God, that name.
I just can't.
It's seriously, Optimus Prime. Optimus Prime and Metatron. Yeah. Are you fucking serious?
I'm trying to, in my head, think of what Optimus Prime sounds like.
No, go. Do your best impression. When was the last time you watched a Transformers movie?
Like a decade and a half ago.
Exactly. Go.
Go.
Give me your best Optimus Prime.
We must save the planet. What did he sound like? I don't know. He's kind of...
I feel like... Does he have a gravelly voice?
Kind of close, to be honest. He kind of sounds like he's like narrating...
I can't remember him either.
He sounds like David Attenborough to me, in my head.
Mm.
But like, if David Attenborough was a Transformer. He's a Transformer.
Attenborough truck. Prime.
Bless him, seriously.
Anyway, I... Like... My gosh, destroy religion. But also...
But that, I don't even think that's the message.
You don't?
I don't think it's like religion doesn't have to exist.
What do you think is the message?
I think it's just nobody's fucking business. Like, you have a connection. You can have a connection with anything that's spiritual. You have it. It doesn't have to be organized. You don't have to like enforce it on anybody. It doesn't like...
See, I definitely don't think that was his message. I think his message...
I think in light of who he is as an academic, his message absolutely that religion shouldn't exist.
Yeah, I think his, like, I don't think he's anti the idea of believing in spiritual beings.
But he is an atheist over an agnostic.
He is against religion.
Yeah.
Like, he hates religion. He doesn't hate spirituality.
But he obviously has this, like... It's interesting because he has all of this criticism, which is all very valid, but it's obvious that he is actually interested in figuring out.
Yeah.
Like, he's speculating on so many things, and we can say that they're not real, but he's put so much thought into how the universe might be organized. It's interesting that someone that's like so anti is in his own way trying to spiritually understand life.
And I also like it as kind of the flip side of Narnia.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, because as pretty much everybody knows, Narnia is like a semi retelling of the Bible.
I didn't know that until like 3 years ago.
What? I feel like and Aslan is God.
No, I didn't know that at all.
How did you? You're an English major.
Yeah, well, I never actually read them.
But I feel like it's just common knowledge.
Yeah, I think critically, and I get a lot of things, but the obvious shit just does not click for me. Like, it just doesn't. And then, like, all of a sudden, I'm like, what was an example the other day? Oh, like, it's even, like, contractions of words where I just use the word and use the word and use the word. And then I'm like, I can't even think of it. I need you to think of an idea. It's like, this is a bad example. But it's like, I don't actively realize that reinterpret is interpret, but repeating it.
Mm.
And so it's contracted into like, we're reinterpreting it. I don't notice that until much too late, you know? So.
I don't really notice those things either.
I guess what I mean is like, there's a lot of really obvious things. I notice a lot of things that aren't obvious.
But also, notice it if you'd read them.
But it's also that, like, I was raised with absolutely no religion and no biblical knowledge. I have absolutely no understanding of any biblical stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that has actually been, like, kind of a little bit detrimental to my English degree because, like, we'll read something and someone will be like, oh, well, that's the Tower of Babel. And I'm like, how the fuck did you know that?
Well, yeah, well, like...
like, oh, I went to Catholic school.
I'm currently reading The World's Wife, which is a poetry collection by Caroline Duffy.
I had to do a lot of Googling for that one.
Yeah, so much Googling.
Yeah.
It's like Delilah, and I'm like, who the fuck is Delilah?
Yeah.
Biblical.
Well, that's like my favourite artist, Regina Spektor. She has this song called Samson, which is really... and it's about Samson and Delilah. And I just thought that it was a girlfriend and her boyfriend, she's just cutting his hair and eating bread together. And I was like, that's such a nice song. And then I was like 16 and I was like, oh. This thing about organized religion, though, is really interesting. Because the source of this whole affair is Philip Pullman reading Milton's Paradise Lost, which is a retelling of The Fall of Man.
Yeah.
And essentially, we didn't really talk about it last episode, but the whole driving force of the narrative is that there's been this, it's not a prophecy. They don't even call it a prophecy.
Yeah.
But they know that somebody's being reborn as the new Adam and the new Eve.
Yeah.
And Eve is Lyra.
Yeah.
And Adam as well.
Yeah.
And Mary Malone is the Virgin Mary.
Yes.
No.
Not the
She's
virgin.
The snake. Sorry.
Yeah.
She's the snake.
She is the snake. She tempts
She tempts with knowledge.
Yeah.
And so it's a very interesting way to propel the narrative forward, but to also re-examine this like foundational kind of archetype.
Yeah. Well, and I think like I would have missed out on so many if there were biblical references in these books.
Yeah.
Over my head. Wouldn't know.
Yeah, no.
I wouldn't know at all. I don't even really... The snake tempts Eve and she eats an apple. Right?
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
So they're in the garden. I've read Paradise Lost.
They're in the garden.
They're in the garden. Well, Adam's in the garden. Okay, he's naked. He's like, this is so nice, God. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is great, isn't it? Look at all these bushes. Bit lonely. I'm a bit lonely, though,
Eve gets made out of a rib.
Yeah. And God's like, well, that's okay. I'll make you a friend. But you're my number one guy. So I'll make them a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Here's Eve. She's a woman. And they like live in the garden and they're all like really, really pure. And they just do their gardening. And like the whole of Paradise, like the first kind of book of Paradise Lost is just like they're in the garden. And then Eve kind of goes off and does gardening by herself. And she's kind of like sitting around. She's like bored. She's like, what the fuck are we doing here? You know, like this is really nice. But I just need a little work. Come on.
She needs some spice. Yeah.
And the snake.
Yeah.
The slithery snake comes and is like, hey. Oh, because the other thing is God's like, everything's real nice. Don't touch that tree.
Yeah, the apple tree.
That's my special tree.
Yeah.
And they go, are you going to eat those apples? He goes, no, but you can't touch them. And they go, okay. But then the snake's like, hey, Eve, are you a little bored? And Eve's like, yeah. And she's like, the snake's like, hey, if you eat one of those apples, things are going to get a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
And so Eve eats an apple and she makes Adam also eat the apple. Adam wants to, though. He's like, I was thinking about it, you know, but twist my arm. And essentially they unlock knowledge, but they also unlock sexuality. And that's when they have smex.
And they
And so that's like that kind
of... They copulate.
Yeah. And that's sinful.
Mm.
And God's like, what did I tell you to do? Like, what did I tell? I told you one, there was one rule. And so they get kicked out. And that's the fall of man.
Yeah.
It's Eve's fault because she wanted access to education.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. You know, I'm really going to take God's side on this one. I think women are inherently evil. And, you know... I commonly tell you to do something, and then you don't do it.
Yeah.
And I wish I could kick you out.
I know.
Of our Garden of Eden on the hill.
Yeah, but you know, Adam does things too, and sometimes Eve just doesn't talk. You know, she just goes, "Oh, I don't mind."
Yeah. What are you gonna do? But again, this like the way that Philip Pullman reinterprets this story is that this temptation is not going to be the fall of man. As he thinks it is.
Yes.
It's the fall of him. It's the fool of
yes.
God.
Yes.
It's the fool of the authority.
Absolutely.
And that's really why they're like, don't find out what dust is. Don't unlock all of blah, 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 blah.
And when I read Paradise Lost, that's the idea that I got. And Milton did not mean to write that.
Mm.
But it was very much like, it kind of seemed, it seems like God set that up, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Like, you don't, like, create people. Like, it's just...
He set up the loading gun. Like,
also, because, like, how boring if you're God and you make these creatures. You're like, this is my life's work. I made this nice world for them, and I made these nice creatures. Cool. Boring. Like, wouldn't you rather that they had some falls and then they made all these people
yeah.
and all this... Like, nobody wants to just watch, like, two people having fun in a garden.
God, no. Like, Alfred Hitchcock created this rule in film theory where it's like, if you've got a gun in the scene,
yeah.
and if you show a shot of a gun, it has to go off
yeah.
in that scene.
Can't
it's the same
tree.
Thing.
Can't
you can't put a
tree
forbidden
in the
tree.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's obvious. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was the original Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, he was.
If you think about it.
God
yeah. equals Hitchcock. Do you have anything else to talk about with organized religion?
I think we've gone through a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know very much about organized religion, so
neither.
I don't have anything more to say.
I just go, I agree, Pullman. Slay. And also, yes.
Okay, King, that's some interesting stuff you're putting down. I'm going to go think
yeah.
about it.
Do thinking.
Yeah.
Do the act of
Although,
thinking.
Like, it's quite funny. His this series is the most banned children's book above Harry Potter. It's like America's like, get this out. Like, it's evil.
Really?
But he kind of flew under the radar for a really long time. And like, Harry Potter got all the flack. And he was like... Why are you giving all that flack to Harry Potter? I'm openly saying their religion is bad. And what, you're going to like care more about some fucking wizards? I literally kill God in my book.
And also, he also has witches.
He's witches. He's everything.
He's got everything.
He's got everything.
He is everything, honey.
He is
a
yes,
Philip Pullman's period. Anyway, I have to say...
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of our favourite characters.
Okay, great.
My favourite,
yeah.
obviously, is Mrs. Coulter.
I know. You love
a legend.
You love a total bitch.
An evil,
it's like Rebecca,
vindictive
you loved
woman.
Mrs. Danvers.
Oh, I love Mrs. Danvers. She was so manipulative.
Objectively the worst.
Oh, so good. She was fierce. Anyway, I feel the same way about Mrs. Coulter because she is... A one-woman, unstoppable force.
Yeah, she seriously
there
is.
There is not a single thing that will waver her.
And she's selfish.
She is so
and I
selfish.
Love it.
And evil. But in an interesting way, with interesting rules that
she's
she kind
also
of
like,
sets for herself.
She's a mystery. You
she's
know,
such
I don't
a mystery.
I feel like we really know the real Mrs. Coulter.
Which is great.
Which is great.
I just think she is such a good villain.
And there's all she but she's also not even a villain. She's got
yeah.
her own motivations and she changes. Like she
But that's
she,
what makes her the best villain.
I know,
you
I know.
Because she's complex. She's not just like Voldemort is just evil.
See,
she's just an evil person.
I know, he's not a great
Mrs. Coulter, so complex. You literally don't know what she's gonna do next.
Do you see Lord Asriel as a villain?
I would say that he's villainous as
yeah.
well. But he Yeah, I would say he's a partial villain.
I would
villain.
Say he's a villain. I would say that, like, I think if he was a woman, he did all those things as a woman, we'd see him as also a villain.
Yeah, I think that the only difference is that Mrs. Coulter is more outwardly the villain, at least in the first book.
Yeah, Asriel's like,
She's literally just chasing them and trying to
He's one of those people that's like,
them.
I'm doing this for the world, but the ends don't justify the means.
No, exactly.
Like, he fucking killed a child.
He did. He killed
he
little
killed
Roger.
Roger.
Yeah. Just because you're trying to
in
kill God, too.
In front of his own fucking daughter. Traumatized her. For the rest of her life, killed her best friend. She was watching. And then abandoned her. Was like, oh, see you later, Lyra. God, you've been annoying.
Yeah, no.
You just foil me at every fucking turn. Although the thing about him killing Roger is really interesting is because he... And it's weird because he wants to kill the authority, but, like, there's all of these kind of, like, snippets where Lord Asriel kind of mentions... praying, like he's not praying but he's like wishing because he's up in the snow and he's finally figured out how to open the gateway into all of the worlds
yeah
but it requires the energy
yes
that only severing the connection between a child and its demon can provide. And so he's like, how the fuck am I, where am I going to find a fucking child? Like, what is this going to, and he's like praying. And because he's trying to beat the authority, which is doing the same thing. And that's why there's all of those experiments at Bullvanger. And he's trying to beat them. He knows that they've figured it out.
Mm.
And so he's like waiting and praying. He's praying for a child. And the first child, and within like a day or so, Lyra knocks on his door, and he's like, he doesn't see Roger at first. He just, Lyra goes, I think, by herself first, and is like, hello, I found you. And he's like, fuck, that's not what I meant. I didn't mean my own fucking daughter.
Yeah.
And then, but then Roger's there.
And then he's like, oh, great, I kill him instead. Phew.
But it's interesting that, like, he is obviously so against religion. He wants to literally kill God, but yet he is still praying.
Well, this is why I think, like, he... This is what makes Lord Asriel so interesting, because I think that, as is pointed out in the books, it's kind of difficult to know if he's doing this because he genuinely thinks that the authority is doing evil things that he wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Or if he just wants to beat the most powerful being in the universe.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like...
Isn't that such...
The authority isn't shown to be an evil force.
Yeah.
Right?
We're not even so much the authority, but people in his...
Like, the authority in terms of the organization.
Yeah.
Is shown to be an evil force.
Yeah.
And so that seems justified to destroy.
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to be what... He wants to do. He wants to destroy this, as we find out, frail old man. He just wants to win, and he just wants to beat the most powerful thing.
But then it makes the ending so much more spectacular. Like, Mrs. Coulter and Lord Asriel's, the way that they're, I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to, like, take it away. We've talked about so many things that happen in the book. Their showdown, but then also the resolution that they reach.
Mm-hmm.
Is so interesting and so moving and so kind of confusing because of how vicious they are. They decide to unite at last at the end for one final action.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's so good. It's so good.
And I just think Lord Asriel just has the hottest vibes ever. And I'm not sure what it is.
I think it's because he's got a snow leopard for a demon.
Yo, it's so hot. That is what it is. Yeah, he's a sexy snow leopard demon.
Imagining the human that would associate with a snow leopard demon. Like,
no,
oh,
you're so right.
So
like,
hot.
Like, how do you get a snow leopard? Yeah.
You have to pull some fucking strings to get a snow leopard.
Yeah, you've really put, yeah.
I reckon that's
it. And I think that there's something in that, because I think that, like, the only tell of Mrs. Coulter, like, she's so charismatic and so smooth and so scary with the way that she wields her own power.
Yeah.
She's a fucking crazy monkey.
The golden monkey
is so fucking scary. I've never been afraid of anything. But, like, that's her tell.
I also love that the golden monkey is, like, honestly, the way that the golden monkey is portrayed is, like, the most powerful, evil,
that's the
strong
authority.
Being.
Okay.
Like that is seriously what you are the most scared of. Monkey. Yeah, I would have been surprised. Now, that would have been a plot twist, honey. I would have loved that.
The golden monkey is so interesting because, like, in a way, the monkey and Mrs. Coulter seem all-powerful.
Yeah.
They're never really defeated. They're always one step ahead. They seem all powerful. But they have this relationship with each other, which is so interesting. Because Mrs. Coulter hates the monkey and the monkey hates her.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of inflict pain on each other.
Yeah.
And there's all of these, like every time you, like, there's a passage about the monkey, it's always noted the way that the monkey, like, looks at Mrs. Coulter. There's this, like, deep... like visceral hatred between them, and that's her soul. You know, like it's not even that she, like, I hate myself. Like it's something so overwhelming and something so much more.
Yeah, and I think it's partly because the two aren't all that similar. Like the golden monkey gladly and openly shows his emotions and
he's
kind
fierce.
He is fierce, and he openly shows that. Like he's like. I am vicious.
Openly vicious.
Mrs. Coulter is just not. Like, she wants to be portrayed as anything but openly vicious.
But I think part of the reason why the monkey hates her so much is that she uses the monkey to be vicious. She doesn't do any of the acts that are, like, abhorrent. She gets the monkey, and the monkey will like grab Pantalamon, which is like not all good.
Yeah.
And like essentially strangle other people's demons. And Mrs. Coulter's like, not my problem.
I know.
But it's like, girl, that's you.
But like, there's also an interesting idea, like this idea that of the human and the demon hating
being
one another.
Incongruous with each
other. Which is definitely
other.
Something that he explores in the epilogue prologue.
Do we want to talk about the epilogue prologue now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So he's currently writing a trilogy.
Yeah.
He's written two books. There's a third coming out.
It's a prequel and a sequel.
Yeah. The first book has got Lyra in it, but as a tiny, teeny little baby.
Yeah. She's just been born, and it's kind of like, I actually thought it was really good. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I thought it was good.
It's kind of about there's this great flood in London, and there's this boy called Malcolm?
Yes.
And Malcolm.
And this girl called Alice.
Yeah, and they have to save Lyra.
Essentially, it's like this. It's the start. It's the understanding that Lyra is different, and the Magisterium is trying to get hands on her, and she's been taken away from Mrs. Coulter, and it's another kind of race to get Lyra to where she's safe, which is Jordan College, which is where the Northern Light starts.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
She lives there, which you don't realise in the Northern Lights, but she lives at Jordan College because it's a sanctuary, and the Magisterium has almost complete power over the world, but there are some rules that it hasn't changed
yet. They've got this idea in the world of academic immunity or something like that, where the Magisterium can't do anything on Jordan College's grounds.
Yes, but there's this tension where the Magisterium is actively trying to
dissolve that. In that first book, the villain is like this evil man with a hyena demon.
Oh my god, he's so scary! So
terrifying!
Scary. And it's like...
Yeah, and like they could hear the hyenas laugh like... It's so scary.
Oh my god, it's so scary. Hyena. I forgot about the hyena.
Yeah.
And he crazy. He'd be crazy.
He is so crazy.
But there's also this magical element. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, there was quite a lot of magic.
Weird.
Yeah, it was quite good. I really liked it. And then the second book was different.
So it's not like super chronologically.
No.
So so the first one is as Lyra's a baby. The second one is quite a long time after
the
Amber Spyglass.
After the Northern Lights
trilogy. She's like 20.
Yeah.
And I do think there's this really interesting relationship between Lyra and Pan don't talk to each other.
Yeah, because Pan is still really angry at her for leaving him on the shores of the dead when they went into the underworld.
Yeah.
And so in the second book, we see Pan run away in like one of the opening chapters.
Pan literally leaves her.
Like literally leaves her.
And it's obvious. And they obviously have had this relationship for like many years, and it's been getting worse.
Mm.
And we don't know quite what made him run away completely. But he's gone, and she's trying to find. She can't live in this world without a demon.
Yeah.
Because it's like abhorrent to people. It's grotesque. It's like walking around, but you're a zombie.
Yeah.
You know?
And then at the same time, so she's going on this adventure and she's also got all of these other forces kind of at play, and she knows that she has to go out east. There's some stuff to do with these roses that we haven't really found out the answer for, but we'll probably find
and
that
there's
out
like
in the third book.
There was a fire thing.
Yeah, there was
something
new
about
new creatures.
There's these kind of like new demons that don't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because of science. There's also like a lot of we learn a lot about the Golden Compass itself.
Mm-hmm.
I found that really interesting. My biggest critique.
Yeah.
Well, you know my biggest critique, but the reason why I don't think this story works particularly well is trying too hard to have a plot. Like, it's got all of these things that are really interesting that we want to know more about. We want to know more about who Lyra is as an adult.
Yeah.
We want to know more about her relationship with Pan. We want to know about the alethiometer. We want to know about what's happened to Malcolm and Alice, you know, all of that stuff.
Mm.
I don't give a shit about roses and turkey. Sorry. I don't get it. Like he had all these things. He could have done it in a less Like, it just seems like he's made it a little bit too big. Yeah. In a way that, like, the original trilogy just isn't.
I think that's the... I think the biggest problem for the series is it misses out on the first trilogy's conciseness.
Yeah.
And the way that it can condense scenes and only have absolutely necessary chapters.
Yes.
Which brings us on to the biggest problem.
This makes me filled with rage.
So in the... This is especially egregious in the...
It's egregious
in the second book. There's a scene, and I'm just going to say what it is. Lyra is traveling on this train.
She's alone.
She's alone, and there's all of these soldiers on it.
And there's some kind of conflict going on.
And the soldiers, I think they realize that she doesn't have a demon with her.
Yeah, and
so they start to kind of make fun of her. And then eventually she gets gang raped by all of the army members.
And it does absolutely
nothing. She jumps on the train at the beginning of the chapter. She leaves the train at the end of the chapter, and absolutely nothing afterwards. Nothing changes. Nothing is addressed.
I know that it's going to be like it. It's going to be a Sansa Stark. She's, you know, next book.
Yeah.
She's going to build herself up. She's going to be that's going to be what changes her into whatever. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Absolutely fuck off, actually.
No, it was...
I don't think that sexual assault should be a plot device.
Never.
I don't think it should ever be a plot device. But I do think there are stories about sexual assault that deserve to be told, and women deserve to talk about what happens to them.
Yeah.
What happens to, like, all of us.
Yeah.
They deserve it. Men don't get to use it.
Yeah.
Because they can't figure out how to make a woman evolve. They can't figure it out, so they're going to go, oh, we'll rape her. Then she'll understand. Like, then she'll change. That's not okay. And it's also just that, like, again, not that I think that sexual assault should serve the plot, but this just doesn't make any sense. Even if we were putting the egregiousness of it out of the way, it's
so despicable. It's disgusting. It's disturbing, and it's completely unnecessary.
I also think there's something particularly hurtful to me personally, not to me personally, but like personally.
Yeah.
It feels particularly hurtful that you'd take such an amazing female child character and grow her up and rape her.
Yeah.
That was a choice.
I reckon that was theoretically, I think the point, I'm doing air quotes here.
Yeah.
The point is that Lyra is seen as kind of fearless and unstoppable.
And this is making her, you know, it's humbling her.
What he's trying to do is to create, like, obstacles, you know? Another obstacle.
Like,
and
this is the easiest story for a man to use. Like, there's this movement.
And it's just not the story that he's telling.
It's not. It doesn't make any sense.
Why is it there?
But it's also that there's this movement, and especially within crime fiction. I took this brilliant paper by Liam McIlvany, who lectures in Dunedin. He's a Scottish writer. He writes really fantastically. And he, in that class, was basically like, crime at the moment hinges on a woman being murdered and often raped, and a man seeking justice for her. And that's not ethical. We can't write that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be writing that. You know, if women want to tell that story, they can. But think about every crime novel that you've read, and it's a woman gets murdered. You don't learn nothing about her as a person. She just dies, but it's just a vehicle for some normally like boring fat old detective.
Yeah.
Who's homophobic and down on his luck, and he's like, oh, I can't make rude, xenophobic jokes anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just a device. It makes no fucking sense in this story. So as you can tell,
we aren't like as big of fans of his recent work. I think that the books overall, they're fun to read.
They are fun to read.
Most of the time.
And I listened to the audiobook and Michael Sheen read them to me, and he is brilliant.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah. And so I'll definitely read the third one, but You can totally skip over that chapter.
And I'm just thinking about when we put the Instagram announcement out, I was like, oh, I'll tag Philip Pullman Official in the post. And I hope that he listens to that one and then he listens to this one.
Yeah.
And so, hey, Philip. Look, and then you could change that in a later edition, actually. You could have a wee think about that a bit more, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe some self-reflection.
Yeah, that would be Pullman, great.
Because we love you.
Yeah.
I
think the thing that's also most disappointing, aside from the fact that I read these books as a child and it feels as though somebody that I saw as an avatar for myself has grown up to be a 20-year-old woman and has been assaulted. Apart from that, he's better than this.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even... It's within his power to write a story better than this.
I know. We've seen it.
He has.
We've read it.
Yeah, he has the skills, and that's what's most frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like when a fucking... like a movie actor or an artist or something just comes out with a flop, and you're like...
Oh, I thought you were going to do like a Rex Orange County.
Oh, but yeah. That too. Oh, God. Oh, God. To go back to a flop. You know... It's disappointing. It's not that it's just bad. I was rooting for you.
We were all rooting for you. Okay. So we're starting to wrap things up here.
Yeah.
On our discussion, but I'm looking through the points that we have on the drive.
Yeah.
And one of them just says, "Can adult books be cheerful?" Question mark. And under that, it says, "Amy says no."
This came up because we had it when we were planning this initially. We had an argument where you were like, "These are great children's books." And I was like, "I don't really think they're children's books." And then I was like, "No, they kind of are children's books because adult books aren't happy." And you're like, "I see. Adult books can be happy." And I was like, "Name one good book that's really happy." And I think I've read some really good books lately that are happy. Still Life by Sarah Women. Everything in that book is happy. That's the only book I've ever read that's an adult book that's happy. But I remember, and I know you did the same thing. I got to 13 years old and I went, "It is time for you to grow up."
Yeah, it's time for me to read the Man Booker shortlist.
This must end, okay?
Yeah.
This frivolous teenage...
I can't read another
young adult
dystopian
fiction. Oh. Absolutely not. You're better than that. And like, we also went both ends of the spectrum where I was like, "I'm going to read Dickens." Like, I was like 13.
Yeah.
And then I was like, "No, I'm going to read like adult books." And I was like, "They're so fucking sad."
And boring.
And our family friend, Fee, she doesn't read adult books because she doesn't feel that she needs that negativity in her life. And that is so legit. Like, like slay.
And these,
and to know yourself so well.
These books, for any age.
Oh, absolutely.
And I say
and
that
fun.
Fully.
They're
oh,
fun.
They're so fun. So quick. Great for a reading slump. So good.
So good for a reading slump.
Because also engaging.
Also like
thought-provoking
a good way
as well.
To try something new. If
If
you've never, you know, dipped into science fiction slash
fantasy slash speculative fiction.
Yeah. Then maybe
You'll
this is for
this.
You.
Yeah.
I also want to say, we mentioned her last episode, but my favourite character, yours is Mrs. Coulter.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is Serafina Piccola.
Yeah, she is.
She is a witch.
Yeah.
And she is just, she's an enigma. I don't know anything about it. She's got a goose demon. And
she
the goose
sure
is
does.
Cool.
I love that they've got goose demons. I love geese. I love freshwater aquatic birds.
I love freshwater aquatic birds.
Ducks,
yeah.
Swans, geese. Ugh.
What about the crested grebe? Did you vote for them in New Zealand?
No. I voted for the blue pheo. I always do. I always do.
I voted for the crested grebe. And so did my friend Harry Creevy.
The crested grebe. Your friend.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if that would slip last year.
How many times have you met him before?
Once.
Yeah, thought so.
We're best internet friends.
But, you know, something about Serafina Piccola is I cannot separate her from Eva Green in the movie.
Absolutely not. She's Eva Green.
Was perfection.
It was so good. But... my final note on Serafina, I want an origin story. She's been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
We know that she's had a relationship with Fardacorum, who is like one of Lyra's best friends and kind of guides. But we know that they had a child together. How?
Imagine a House of the Dragon style TV show where we follow the witches as they have like tribal conflicts. Okay.
Oh my God.
And every like episode we do get lots and lots of time jumps and they wouldn't even have to recast. But they could go through all sorts of periods.
Can we go back and you just don't say that so I don't, but I don't know about it? Because that's awesome.
So good. Philip, we know you're listening.
Hey, Philip.
You should start writing
this
series.
You heard our big critique.
Yeah. We love
you. Here's some constructive ideas.
Yeah.
Girl Boss Lady Show, but the witches.
That would be so, so good.
And I don't know why, but the fucking duck, like the goose.
The goose.
The goose is so charismatic.
Oh.
And he's just like, and he's so coy.
He's so coy.
He's like, Lyra.
He's very responsible.
Serafina knows she's coming. Yeah. And Lyra's like, the fuck? And he's like, don't worry. And because this is the thing about witches, is they're geese and ducks, you know, they're demons. They can go really, really far.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of a witch's power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And witches don't get cold, so they're up in like the freezing cold off and they're like little skimpy. Slay. They're like little skimpy dresses.
Yeah, they're wearing little slip dresses. It's always silky.
Oh,
silky, silky.
So fabulous.
And she's Eva Green.
Yeah, she is Eva Green.
Eva Green is, God.
Where did she go?
Something about her. I don't know. I saw her in a trailer.
I trail her.
Saw her in a trailer the other day and I went, this is below you, girl.
Oh, no.
It was just some kind of, there wasn't any magic.
No.
She
wasn't
magic. A vampire. She wasn't dead. She wasn't a witch.
She
was a housewife. She wasn't even crazy.
No.
It wasn't
illegal.
It wasn't the 1920s. Eva Green.
No, she knows her worth.
Yeah, she does.
I know she knows her worth. But, you know, speaking of Eva Green.
The casting.
There's a movie.
There is a movie.
Okay, there's also a TV show. Let's start with the TV show, only because I haven't seen it, but I feel I get really good vibes.
I've seen it. I've seen all of it.
Yeah.
It's really slow.
Yeah. Actually, I saw the first few episodes of the first season, and I was like, this is all right. But they introduced Will in the first season, which I thought was weird.
I actually think that was a really good idea.
I didn't get to see that payoff.
It paid off.
Good.
It was a really good idea. I think that actually, if we could go back and revise the books, I would structure it like... No, actually, I wouldn't. But in a TV format... It makes so much more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, like, he gets introduced at the same time as Lyra, and we kind of see all of these things with his mother and his father going missing. His father's played by Andrew Scott. And
oh, great.
And he's also kind of being watched by, like, what's the guy?
Boreal.
Yeah. So we also get immediately this... view of Lord Boreal, and so we know that the worlds, it's not a surprise that that you're slipping through worlds, which I think is good, because I think the majority of people that are watching it have read the books.
Yeah.
And if not, they kind of need to understand that, because from a movie, that's a big 180, you
yeah
know?
Yeah.
It's really good. I don't think that Lin-Manuel Miranda should be Lee Scoresby.
I don't think he should be.
A mistake. I love you, Lynn.
I think he's so great at composing. I've never seen him act and be like, I'm so glad you're in this project.
No, I haven't. No. And also because Lee Scoresby, I don't remember who he's played by in the movie. Fantastic.
Ruth Wilson.
Oh my God,
Mrs. Goulder.
She's so good.
She. Oh,
and, like,
perfect.
I knew that she had the acting chops for it, because her and Luther, she's chilling. Chilling and charismatic. And, oh, God. I think that James McAvoy, he works, but I think that Daniel Craig in the movie, we're kind of moving between the movie and the...
Yeah. We're talking about the casting.
Daniel Craig was a perfect Lord Asriel, in my opinion.
I actually think the casting in the movie was also fucking good.
But I changed my opinion in that the third season, James McAvoy has some long hair. That he's tying back.
Oh, is that
Which is,
that's
I actually
good.
Think, really works.
Is it hot?
Yeah. It is. It is hot.
Yeah, I thought so.
The movie had some really good casting too.
The movie is
Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman, fabulous. Whoever the Lyra was, great.
Yeah. Do you know what she was in later?
Who? What?
Skins.
Oh.
Season 3.
Dakota
Blue Johnson.
Go Dakota Blue Johnson. Oh, and I guess 50 Shades of Grey too.
No. the other problem with the TV series, which is, like, my brother who loves Philip Pullman, I don't think he's watched all of it because it's such a big show and it's so much budget, they don't have enough budget to animate the demons.
See, this would also be my concern about the third season in particular. The third season is whack.
It's so real much whack. Stuff happens. There's a lot of conversation on the internet being like, how are they going to do the Malefa?
Are they doing Malefa?
Well, they should. Actually? They have to.
They do have
to. It's central.
Everything is essential.
But like the whole story really, the heart of it is at the start in the demons and you only see like one of them in a shot ever. And it's just they're just out of shot.
Yeah. No, that's not good. But this is the interesting thing because I think the budget required totally mm-hmm. movie worthy, but yep. the story does require, it requires more runtime than a movie
I
can do.
Agree, kind of, because I think it's lost how exciting
yeah.
it is. It's really very slow.
I think the Gold Compass works as a movie.
The movie's great, yeah.
Because it's a much more cohesive.
It's also a standalone. Like you
could
just
such
you can
a standalone,
just watch,
and
you can
it's just
an,
it's just yeah. an adventure. You can cut scenes kind of short.
I think
there's
it's
not
like,
much dialogue.
It's
like
also
you can just
one of the only
quickly move
kind
through
of,
things.
Adaptation that's had a remake. Where I still really like the first one. I think that movie was great.
The first movie was fucking lit.
Like it doesn't compare to the book.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good if you want to like feel the world and like.
It's also infamous in like the film world
yeah.
for completely bankrupting its studio before it even came out.
I just think that's so.
They
funny.
Spent so much money.
Yeah, they
the
did.
Directors were like, "Please, we need more money, more money, more money." They were like, okay. And then by the time they went to release it, they're like, "We actually have no money to advertise this movie."
And they didn't.
All. And so they sold it individually to different countries
oh
so that they could individually sell it.
That is so
fierce.
Bad.
Fierce.
The
Golden
thing
Compass.
That's really good about the TV series is that you really get to know the Egyptians.
Oh, that's good.
They're a big part of it. And the actress that plays Mark Oster is fantastic.
Yeah, I bet. I trust the BBC and their casting.
Also, I think that the choices that they made in casting, like Will's black,
mm-hmm.
and so is Lord Boreal, and there's a lot more diversity in a way that makes, like, it just makes sense, and
yeah,
it's
yeah,
great,
yeah.
and it's not, they haven't made a fuss about it, it just feels really natural and awesome, and in a way that you're like, why the fuck didn't they do that? Why don't we do that
yeah.
everywhere?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be fair, they went in the first Golden Compass movie. So we wouldn't have known what they would have been cast as.
No, I mean, they could have cast it differently.
Oh, yeah,
like, it
yeah.
hasn't affected the story in any way.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
but
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
honestly, that's everything that comes out that now that has good, diverse casting.
I know.
It really doesn't change the story. Sometimes it makes the story much better.
I know.
Most times. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what we're here to talk
no,
about
no.
today.
Do you have anything else to talk about
I don't
in terms
think so.
Of the
I think that's
movie
everything.
Or TV show? Great. Well, I guess. Oh, actually, there's one other thing
there's
I need to talk about.
There.
There's two more things in there.
Okay.
One thing I need to talk about when we're talking about adaptions.
Yeah.
Did you know that there's been a series of West End productions of various novels in these series?
I did not know that until I looked at the notes just now.
Like, there's a Book of the Dust.
Wait, is there music?
There's
is it a musical?
It's a play.
Oh.
Like La Belle Sauvage,
is
a play.
I think that would be kind of a good play.
How the fuck would you do a hyena and a witch?
Oh, somebody could just do laughing.
It's also, the entire thing is in like...
In a boat.
Is in a boat, which
yeah,
would, like, would be quite
sense.
Easy. But there's also the Golden Compass play.
Okay, I don't know why that's a play.
How the fuck did they do
that's
that?
That's crazy.
Anyway.
I bet they're not that good.
No. Actually, they got really good reviews, really? And they won a lot of awards. Yeah, okay. They're actually really good.
How do you do such thorough research?
Yeah, always. Okay, there is one more thing.
Yeah.
There's one more question that it's almost slipped through our fingers.
Okay.
But who is the queer character?
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, because statistically,
yeah,
there's some queers in there, and who are they?
Look, there's the gay angels, obviously.
Yeah, they're gay, obviously.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the others.
I think Roger could have been gay.
Yeah, I think so too. That would be a real shame, because then it would be
kill the gays. Very
gays. That trope. I reckon, in my heart of hearts, Mary Malone is a lesbian.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, seriously?
Look. There's no discussion. She's absolutely a lesbian.
Like, who's the gorilla lady? Is it Jane Goodman?
The gorilla lady. Jane Goodall.
Goodall, yeah. She's also lesbian. I don't actually think she is.
I don't think she is, but she seems.
Exactly.
That's like Emma Thompson.
That's the
Emma Thompson feels like a lesbian,
absolutely,
but she's not.
Absolutely, and that's the important bit. Yeah.
I also don't think that Serafina Pickle is a straight woman.
No.
You know?
You can't spend that much time around a whole bunch of sexy ladies in the north and not, you know, taste it.
It's an all-female race.
Like, of course, they're going to have some fun.
Like, they're all gorgeous and wearing those slippery dresses.
Yeah, and they don't, like, get tired. They don't pant.
I think they can go different.
They can literally go all night.
A different guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Lee Scoresby's a gay man.
Oh, see, I see him totally as bi. He's like,
yeah, okay.
I'll just fuck anybody who I really vibe with, you know? Totally.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Wait, what's his name?
Yeah.
Miranda Lin-Manuel.
Lin is so densely in theatre, but he doesn't seem at all like
which is why he doesn't work.
He's so straight.
He does not work. He's too straight.
Sorry, Lin.
Look, we've talked a lot about our own thoughts, and I think it's time for us to really get into the online discussions that are going on.
Take a trip down an internet rabbit hole to see what other people have to say about the book. Follow us now as we venture down the Reddit rabbit hole.
That's right. It's Reddit rabbit hole time.
Yeah, baby.
Okay. And this week, I'm in charge of the Reddit rabbit hole.
You've been on the deep,
hole.
Dark web.
Yeah, I have. Overall, I'd just like to start off by saying, fascinating Reddit thread. so good. Highly recommend. Some interesting theories and questions posed.
Yeah, I was very upset that I wasn't allowed to do it this time.
Yeah, it wasn't very...
You didn't even let me do peeking.
No, it wasn't very funny.
Funny.
Because I think... The fans of this book are quite like...
Serious, they take it seriously.
They're quite serious, and they're quite like switched on, and they were asking like genuine questions about like the nature of organized religion, and I was like, slay. Love this.
Let's get into it.
But you know, there's some things that I found.
Okay, great.
Okay, so what's the first one? The first is just a photo of how this person always imagined the golden monkey. And I just find this funny because it's literally just a picture of a golden monkey. It's just kind of obvious.
It's just like a zoological photo of an orange monkey.
No, which is, it's kind of like a fan casting of the golden monkey, but it's just the
monkey.
Creature that it is,
it's
you know?
Like, it's like thinking of like Will's tabby cat demon.
Yeah,
and
this
being
is like,
I've always
imagined them
Moxie
as a tabby
like
cat.
This. Like, it's just a photo tabby of cat. A tabby. Yeah. It's also like, you didn't imagine that.
You just looked at
a monkey.
you just looked up golden monkey into Google Images.
Yeah,
I mean,
do.
Oh yeah, that is what I imagined them looking like.
Funny that.
Yeah.
It's a golden monkey.
So I found that real funny. Okay, so here's a Reddit post, right? I'm just going to start reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone else excited about the new novella Pullman released about Mrs. Coulter? No spoilers, don't worry. I literally just started it like 10 minutes ago. But so exciting. He gave us something new. Next paragraph. Well, I thought it was new, but actually it was released 7 years ago. I feel silly now, but I'm still excited about reading it.
Bliss! That's like the whole internet after normal people came out. Well, like, new normal people short story. But it was written
real
like
old.
7 years before.
It was written before
it's actually
normal
what
people.
Started the book. Like,
I just reckon that's so funny. Oh, so excited to read something new.
And so earnest. It's to like
so earnest.
Put the correction. Like, did they put that? Did somebody? Do you think somebody commented and was like, "That's actually been out for like
yeah,
7 years"?
I reckon it was like an edit, but they didn't even say like edit. Like they just, it just looks like all one post.
Oh, bless. I'm so excited for them.
Yeah, me too. They are very. You go. Who posted this? Gilmore Girl 34. You slay, girl boss. You read that book, that novella. And then this obviously angered me, this post.
Okay.
From,
well, you
from
say
our demon,
obviously, but I don't know.
Well, you'll understand. Okay. From the demon discussion we had in the previous episode. But the question is, what form would your demon settle as? And this one says, I think mine would be a golden retriever. Although I could be wrong.
That's such a vomit.
You
thing
are
to say
fucking
about
wrong.
Yourself.
If you say that your demon is a golden retriever, immediate red flag.
Like, you're just not.
You assume that everybody really likes you?
Yeah.
No.
Also, demon, like, no. Golden retrievers have this kind of special magical energy.
Yeah.
You know? And it's so bold to think that you'd have that.
So bold.
And like, to choose objectively the best, most attractive, well-tempered dog.
I know. At least choose like a runt. You know, the runt of the litter. So off this golden retriever demon gate, there was a lovely comment that I just found so endearing and delightful.
I can't wait.
So this was the reply to that. The question was, what form would your demon settle as? And this one says, I'm tall and a little clumsy, so I don't fit into all my surroundings. Also, just life story-wise, I tend to need time to get going and master things.
Aww.
But then I may exceed my expectations. I also always liked flying and aviation and always preferred the sea over mountains. The albatross is a magnificent flyer, but have you seen one start... Oh, my God.
It's okay.
Start or land...
Yeah.
Gotcha. Its wings are too big for any ground stuff. It often goes over its head. And so I thought it would fit me well. And I just think it's so
that
cute.
So cute.
It's
Why
just
am
like,
I, like tearing
really,
up?
Really genuinely like thinking about who they would be as a person.
And in a way that's very kind to themselves, but not
overly so.
Overly so. You know, I think
very self reflective.
There's definitely like an area where you can be self-deprecating in this question.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely you can.
And defend, because you don't want to like...
Yeah.
You don't want someone to be like, it's a stupid demon. You
exactly.
Know? She came out here with such faith. She'd thought about it so much.
Oh, I just reckon that was so cute. I really loved
really,
that.
That's really, really cute.
The next thing I want to talk about with the Reddit is I want you to try and guess the responses to this question.
Okay. Yeah.
So the polling responses. The question... Are your demon and Patronus the same animal? Firstly, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think they're the same animal.
You think they're different?
I think they're different.
I think they're different as well.
Oh, great.
So the three options were they aren't the same, they are the same, or they are different species. Which doesn't make sense.
Species.
Just who? What do you think
what?
Won? They are the same and they aren't the same. Which one do you think won?
They are the same and they're wrong.
No, they aren't the same one. But it was very close. I'm surprised by how many people think that they would be the same.
I just don't think they're the same thing at all.
No.
Because, like, a demon is your soul.
Exactly.
It's literally you. A Patronus is born from your best memories. It's like your best self or the things that you like the most.
Yeah. You wouldn't have, like, snake as your Patronus.
What's your Patronus? No, you wouldn't have a snake Patronus.
You know what I mean? But you could have
unless you were a Death Eater and
like
you really liked snakes.
Or, like, a seagull. Or a goldfish. Like, you wouldn't have those sorts of animals as your Patronus, but people could.
I don't think that the Dementors would particularly like a stick. Caw,
caw! It probably would be quite effective.
I think so. But also, if we're entertaining the fact that, like, everybody has a demon, but it depends on where you are, then the Patronus, this, if it... Okay. If a spectre is a Dementor, And we talked about that last episode. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much the same thing. They're your soul. Okay. Yeah. It's not like your demon can protect you from the spectre. The demon can't protect you from a dementor.
No. In fact, it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. The spectre that's what it wants to eat. You need to have a portrayal. Like, that's just stupid. I feel disdain for those people that voted the same.
Well, you've got 106 people to go fight.
Watch me. Seriously.
And then this was an interesting question.
Yeah.
It said, timeline of Mrs. Coulter's hair, right?
Her hair?
Yeah. So it says, has anybody noticed how Mrs. Coulter's hair colour keeps changing? And it goes, I always imagined her as blonde, but in the books, he only describes her as having dark hair. So can someone please explain the timeline? And my reply to that is, no, you're just wrong. There's no timeline.
You just thought she was blonde.
Yeah, I just thought. Like, you're thinking the timeline is Nicole Kidman playing Mrs. Coulter and the way that he wrote the books. There's no... He didn't write them as any different.
That's like my dad, when the Normal People adaptation came out, was like, that's just not what Connell looks like. And I was like, that's exactly what Connell looks like. He's not even really described in the book, but you couldn't get anyone that looks more like Connell than Paul Mescal. He goes, Connell's a ginger.
But it would be even weirder because it would be your dad going, how did he become brunette? Like,
no, that is serious.
Between the events of the book, like
there's almost how
what's
he
the timeline?
Frames it. He's like, how did he, why is he, what changed? Why is he not ginger? I was like, he's never fucking ginger.
That's so weird. So funny. I thought that was so funny.
Oh, God. Yep.
And then this, I thought this was just interesting. Mm-hmm. The question was, where have you visited that felt most like a real world Chitgiaze? Which, in my mind, very like Italian.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Greek, very
absolutely.
European.
I haven't been to Greece or Italy, so I actually don't think I've got anything to say.
But I think it's mostly just the name.
Definitely Chitgiaze. Australia, if I had to choose between.
But this person only mentions cities in South America. Montevideo in Uruguay.
I see that.
Ica in Peru. And I was just like, I think you're probably right.
I think yeah.
That actually makes total sense.
You heard it here first. We accept that idea.
So, Armepos, the Reddit user, you're all right.
You're onto something.
Yeah, seriously. Write a spin-off book.
Chitgiaze.
And that's everything I've got from Reddit Rabbit Hole.
Okay, great. Well, that was a very delightful Reddit Rabbit Hole.
It was very endearing.
Yeah,
I loved it. I highly recommend exploring the Reddit page.
So I think that's everything we've got for...
Yeah, for the Northern Lights.
As well.
Yeah.
That's everything. We've got Judge a Book by Its Cover in a minute, but I thought we'd just wrap this up.
Yeah.
So have we wrapped it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
That was weird.
I know, it's really funny. Like, we can redo it. I don't know.
All right, let's move on to Judge a Book by Its Cover.
Yeah.
And now for the part of the show where Charlie and Amy literally judge a book by its cover.
Okay, so the book we've got in front of us is Angelica Frankenstein Makes Her Match by Sally Thorne. Can you describe this cover for us a little bit, please, Amy?
So it's a royal blue with a kind of navy blue kind of wallpaper pattern on top of that. There's a gold frame.
Yep.
Then there's a very cursive calligraphy, Sally Thorne, who I can only assume is the author.
Yeah.
Then we have two kind of relief, like silhouette.
Yep.
Esque photos of a man at the top. He's auburn haired, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of a sewing motif going on.
Yep.
And then it says Angelica Frankenstein.
Angelica. Angelica.
Like, shut up. Okay. Stop laughing at me. I had 4 hours of sleep. Barely. I'm so sensitive.
Angelika Frukenstein.
Franken. Steen.
Frukenstein.
Angelika Frukenstein. Oh, God. Angelika Frankenstein.
Makes her match.
Oh, God. Okay. So below Angelika Frankenstein makes her match, there's another relief in the other direction of a very vibrantly red-haired woman, mm-hmm. and she's holding a needle. She's in the process of sewing. And in her little one, it just says, a novel.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting, because, like, what else the fuck would this be? Like, it's a memoir. Not a cookbook.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, two rings. And of note, there's a sticker, which I can only assume is a fake sticker,
mm-hmm.
which is awful.
Despicable behaviour.
Which makes me vomit. And it says, best-selling Australian author of The Hating Game.
So it's a romance.
It is a romance.
Yeah.
I chose this because there's a lot going on and I have a lot of questions.
My first thought is I have less questions than I would like.
Mm.
Because I look at this title and I look at this cover and mm-hmm. I go, I could probably tell you exactly what this book is about.
What is it about?
It's so obvious. It's so obvious. She's a werewolf and no, she literally makes a little man to fall in love with.
My questions really lie, and it's the sticker that got me, you know? It's the best-selling Australian author of The Hating Game. The way that's phrased makes it sound like there's two Hating Games with two different authors and one of them's Australian. So this is the Australian author, not the American author of The Hating Game.
No.
And I also think...
They're totally different.
I see a lot of The Hating Game on TikTok, and mm-hmm. I go, I don't know what the algorithm thinks, but I'm not this demographic.
Won't be reading.
That's not for me.
No.
No. And I just don't know how such a undeveloped writer would attempt the jump between a contemporary romance to a period romance that builds upon one of the most influential literary texts ever.
I have full faith in Sally Thorne. She's a really good Australian writer.
She's an Australian writer.
You have to say that.
The other thing that I find unnerving about this cover is the kind of pallor of the two people. They're very pink.
The man is very pale.
He's very pale. But at the same time, he's pale, but he's almost purple.
Mm.
And she is like...
He looks ill, actually.
Maybe he is sick. Dead. I don't know.
Yeah. He doesn't look very good.
No, not good.
Have you seen, you know, so there's these stickers, these fake stickers are really like making the rounds on like popular books. Have you seen the TikTok sensation? Is on like quite a lot of books
you're
now.
You're kidding.
As like a fake sticker. Yeah.
As a fake sticker. That makes me want to...
The TikTok sensation.
Oh, I actually...
How sad is that?
That's not okay.
No.
It's bad enough. I think it's good. It's good that there are now in some bookshops, like as seen TikTok on TikTok section, shelves, which I think is fine.
Yeah, great.
I'm like, that's great. That's really great. Get these people reading, you know? But
it's the fake sticker for me.
The fake sticker is unforgivable at the best of times. Let's go back to one of the other Judger books by its cover, The Dry, which famously had 13 fake stickers on it.
13, fucking many.
Yeah. And all of those stickers, you can't hate those stickers because they're all awards. All awards. So, like, wow, as seen on TikTok. No. Okay. So what are you rating this?
Out of 13 fake stickers.
Oh, yep.
I would say that two of them are sickly pale.
Okay.
What about you?
I would more say that the kind of amount of like stitches per inch out of those,
yeah,
I would say it's roughly one bright pink piece of skin out of a really vibrantly orange hair.
No, I think that, that makes sense. Yeah, I agree with you.
So we gave our thoughts, obviously. We just judged it by its cover, obviously. Hate to Sally Thorne.
No. I'm sure she's a lovely...
She's a lovely Australian
author.
The way that they wrote that as if it was, like, prestigious.
Yeah,
She's Australian.
She's an Australian author. Or even, like, look at this little Australian author getting big.
How dare you speak to me like that? I am an Australian author. Okay.
So
what fun.
Not only is this is kind of it.
I feel sad.
We're kind of done.
Yeah.
It's
anticlimactic and I'm also really tired and I wanna go home.
I guess that the biggest thing to say is a huge thank you to Radio 1.
Oh, a huge thank you.
Because without them we literally wouldn't be able to do any of this.
To Bonnie Harrison.
In particular, Bonnie Harrison.
And to Tommy T.
Yeah.
Who were our supporters
from the get-go.
We actually couldn't have not done it. They wouldn't have let that happen.
In fact, we didn't come to them with anything, really.
No. Yeah. You were shoulder tapped. You said, I'll do it, but only with my friend Amy.
Yeah.
And then you said, they want to talk to, they're proposing a show. And we came in and they said, so what's the show? And we went,
and we literally
and we
made up this show
out of our ass.
On the spot. Yeah. And honestly,
and then we made it. We made three seasons of it.
And it's great. And initially, just so that everybody knows, our initial plan was to make 20 to 30 minute episodes.
There's not one.
Our shortest one was our first one. And that was 45 minutes.
Even the mini episodes, misnomer, they were
none
a normal
of them were
size. I'd also like to thank our biggest fans. You know who you are.
We know who all of our loyal listeners are.
You guys know who you are.
And honestly, it's worth it just for you.
And yeah, this has been one of the best things we've ever done together.
We've had so much fun.
It's been so cool. We've really put our all into it. I don't know if you can tell, we really care.
Yeah.
But
thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you for supporting. And hopefully Required Reading will find a new home.
I know.
But if not,
I can't wait.
Over and out, bro.
That's, you can't end it like that.
Goodbye, my loves.
Goodbye.
This was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.